Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode. We closed off last week discussing with Claire Throssell the importance of getting it right with children, allowing the children's voices to be heard, giving them the basic human rights to feel safe and grow up in a nurturing and loving and secure environment. And unfortunately, to fulfill that, which I know that's very much what professionals suggest they aim to do, they can't successfully do that when they are always considering the rights of the other parent who is the one that's causing harm. We are never ever going to tackle this root cause. The root cause is the conditions and the environment that our younger generation are growing up in. The root cause is the conditioning of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, ways to behave towards anybody in society, but particularly within relationships and family dynamics. By forcing a child into an environment that they are telling you, and the evidence demonstrates and proves clearly that there is a risk to the children, we are conditioning their belief system that behaviour is acceptable. So how are we ever going to tackle the root cause unless we tackle this also? Educating children in schools is only going to achieve so much. So we're going to continue this conversation with Claire this week. So I'll welcome Claire back onto this conversation. And I apologise in advance for the transition not being as smooth as other episodes, but we got quite caught up in this conversation between myself and Claire, and I didn't really want to cut her off midstream during such a serious topic that we're covering. So I've had to do my best in terms of the transitions for the two episodes.
There is so much noise around parental rights and a deafening silence around children's rights. And the rights of the child is to be kept safe, to be loved and allowed to grow up in an environment that allows them to achieve everything that they need to do in life to become decent people for the future of this country. They are getting it wrong on so many levels, and these children, they are the future of this country.
Yeah.
And if they're not invested in, if they're not believed, if they're not supported, then what does the future of our country look like?
Yeah.
Like you say, there's conditions that children are diagnosed with that mask the abuse.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not that they're autistic or they've got ADHD or anything else. It's the fact that they're being abused.
Yeah, their nervous system's responding to the environment.
And they're being abused, and a court's allowed that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I always say labels are not helpful. They're not, they mask the real, the root, potential serious problems. We have to look at the symptoms and the causes, and not the letter. Forget about the labels, because it's going to cloud your judgment every single time. At the end of the day, whatever label we want to assign to somebody, their nervous system is responding to their environment. So we have to ask, well, what within the environment is causing a nervous system dysregulation and causing that response? So if you've got a child who's acting out aggressively, well, the true real question is what within their environment is causing them to behave that way? Of a
Yeah,
child that's just.
and at the end of the day, children can't regulate their emotions. Children can't explain how they feel. Sometimes they just need somebody to hold them and say, it's okay. It's going to be okay. And far too often they are put with somebody who can't do that, and they're not okay, and they come home and they're never okay. Nobody expects to take the children to school in the morning and then know that they're going on a court-ordered visit, and hours later hold them in their arms as they die, whilst under the protection of a court in Kafkas. And in other cases, psychologists, social services, you name them, everybody involved with children don't actually listen, believe, hear, support, or protect them.
No.
Because they just presume they know what's in this child's best interest. They presume that children are not capable of knowing what's best for them. And they presume that children don't understand what's happening to them. And the only people that can tell you are the children.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Their
Yeah.
voices are just lost. And we need to remind these professionals that it's not about presuming they're safe. It's about proving beyond reasonable doubt that children are safe.
Exactly.
And that
Exactly.
needs to be flipped onto the perpetrator. And it's down to the perpetrator to prove that they are actually a fit parent. Just because you've got a child does not mean to say you're fit to look after them or safe. Having children is not an entitlement and it's not a right. It's a privilege, but it's not a right.
I mean, anybody can have a child, but being a parent has to be earned. And that comes by how you show up for that child. That's how you prove it.
It's not
That's where you get the
dollar bills,
title.
it's not presents, it's the times you're up in the night with them, rubbing their backs because they've been sick. It's the times you sing them back to sleep because they've had a nightmare, holding their hands when they're scared, sat at the table doing the homework with them. That's being a parent. And they're a bit like computers, really. You only get out of children what you put into them. Respect isn't something that is automatically given, it should be earned.
And we have to shape and mold them and guide them, so that they become decent and good human beings as well. When we they we it's a case of leading by example. Children learn through observation. So, if what they are observing is toxicity, danger, well, it's inevitable how their life's ultimately going to end up. They may not they may not end up the perpetrator, but they've got a higher chance also of becoming the victim. Whether that's as a whether you know, and that could end fatally as a child, or it could end fatally as an adult. But either way, at some point, it will the consequence of what they were exposed to will manifest in a catastrophic way.
I was lucky because Jack loved music and he was a trumpeter and he had some fantastic role models in the music service. He thought more about his trumpet teacher than he did his own father. Paul was a runner and he thought more about his trainers and coaches than his father. And for Paul, who did have a little bit of a temper, to be able to run and have that discipline and freedom as well on a track. I am so glad that both of them had outlets for their emotions because music is like a family. You're accepted through a shared love of music to become a new family. You all come together to play together and enjoy music, and friendships come from that, and a sense of belonging that sometimes he didn't feel like he had at home. He was just about to become a man, and he was starting to get hairs underneath his arms. And he shouted me up to the bathroom. He went, "Mom, Mom!" So I went flying up the stairs. You get to know as a mum whether it's a drastic situation or it's not so urgent situation. So I went up the stairs and I went, "What's wrong?" And he went, "Look, look." I went, "Yeah, we've had the talk, Jack. You knew that you'd start getting hairs under your arms." And then he looked at his chest and he said, "But I don't want anyone here, and I don't want to look like Dad."
Oh, bless
So
him.
even at that point, he knew what he didn't want to be. And he shouldn't have had to take on the responsibility of me on visits. He shouldn't have had to protect his younger brother and take the brunt of his father's anger when I wasn't there. And he should never have been made to try and save his brother's life and lose his own in the process.
What was interesting there, though, Claire, is that he, because obviously with trauma, when we respond to symbols of danger, symbols of danger represent, like, you know, so for him, a symbol of danger was certain characteristics, certain features that his dad had, and one of them was a hairy chest, and he had associated a man with a hairy chest as a symbol of danger. And that's why he didn't want, because, well, if I have it, well, now I've got this constant reminder of this symbol of danger. And am I going to become that person? So, and it's, there's nothing logical about trauma. Trauma is not logical. You know, to anybody else, that comment may have seemed completely and utterly irrational, but actually, it's, you know, it was the brain had associated that feature with danger. And this is where we need to teach children awareness of their thoughts and their feelings and what are the potential triggers, and try to make sense of them to be able to put an irrational spin on it, so that wasn't going to be a problem to him if he did have ha hairs on his chest. You know, it extends so far when we talk about emotional literacy, and it is crucial. We have to be teaching children this in schools, and it has to be a constant reinforcement thing that that it's a repetitive thing that they're taught throughout the various years to make sure that it sticks and it's not forgotten, because the more we reinforce it, the less chance of the negative influences can come in and disrupt it.
And every word was a sledgehammer in my chest.
Yeah, and that's not something that you could have done anything about either. It's not a problem that you could have removed for him. It's
No, and no matter how hard I scaffolded when they came back from visits, no matter how hard I rebuilt the trust and there. Not sure what word I'm looking for here. Confidence, yeah, self-confidence. Every time you build them back up to who they were as children, and then they go for a visit and it'd start all over again. The scaffolding, the support, the care, the work to regulate their emotions again because they've been afraid, they've been angry, they've been scared. And they don't understand why somebody who keeps saying to them, "Oh, I love you, come here, I want to give you a hug," can behave like that behind words of love. They couldn't understand it.
No. I mean, I've supported somebody whose daughter, because she tried to protect her as much as because she wasn't exposed to as much physically as like our children were. So she couldn't understand her daughter. So she was afraid of her dad, and she couldn't understand. Well, why are you? I'm telling you, Mum, that I don't want to go, yet you're making me. And she's like, but the courts have said. Well, she didn't understand that. But what do you mean, the court? What do you mean, somebody else is saying? Well, children don't understand that.
And it
So
damages the relationship that was
exactly,
there
it
to
does.
parent.
Yeah. You're forcing me into an environment that I'm telling you I don't feel safe in. What do you think that does to the relationship between the child and the safe parent? It slashes away at the trust and safety element. So now suddenly they have nobody that they can depend on, nobody that can they can trust, nobody that they can believe, because everybody is forcing them into an environment that they're telling them they don't want to be in.
And that's the true tragedy. And they're only forced into that because there was a clause underneath the Children's Act that says judges will automatically presume it's in the child's best interest to see both parents. I say the best person to presume that is the child. And it's not about presumption, it's about knowing. Knowing beyond doubt. And children know beyond doubt if they want to see a parent or they don't want to see a parent. Why did they think Paul, who was made to eat peas at a table until he was sick, would want to see somebody on his own when that happens?
Well, exactly.
And why did they think a 12-year-old boy that was called a crybaby by that person who was doing something so bad to his brother would be able to sit and carry on watching that without the protection of his mum?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And this is what the courts just, you know, they refuse to see is that they're depriving that child of any safe parent, because actually when the safe parent is then living on pins, they've not actually removed, they've ended the relationship, but they've not escaped the abuse that they ended the relationship. So they ended the relationship with the hope of ending the abuse. But actually, the abuse is continuing. Yeah. So they are still living on their nerves. So if they are hypervigilant all the time, even if all of the children's basic needs are being met, there is always going to be an emotional disconnect. Because mum... And I'm using mum as the example because mainly the mum that is in this situation is living off her nerves, living in survival, waiting for the next thing to come out of left field. And because she is in survival, it's not an intentional thing, but there's naturally an emotional disconnect because you're most emotionally distant because you're waiting for the next danger thing to come out of nowhere. You're prepared, you're vigilant. And that emotional disconnect has a detrimental effect on the child's emotional development.
That Jack felt like he had to step up and be the man of the house. And I would say to him, that's my job to look after you, Jack. Don't ever think it's the other way around. And I used to feel like I was letting him down because he felt like he had to sacrifice part of his childhood to look after Paul and I, because he'd always seen a certain person, I won't name him, taking charge. And he believed that that was now his role in the family.
Yeah.
And I guess as you see that abusive parent take away their childhood bit by bit, piece by piece, and you go into a family court and believe that they will do the right thing and keep your children safe and make the right decisions, but then they help take away children's childhoods piece by piece. By piece, one incident on top of another, on top of another, until a childhood that should be protected and is, should be sacred has been taken away completely.
Mm.
And you're left with children that are young adults, and it breaks your heart.
Yeah. They are forced, and that's another thing that the family court misinterpret as well as coaching, is when
Children who are exposed to domestic abuse, they are forced to grow up fast, and they're forced to mature very, very quickly. So they generally can then tend to use language that is beyond their years. And that can be misread as coaching, when actually, no, this is a child who is speaking what they are seeing.
And when you consider that children are safer in schools and nurseries and college because of all the safeguarding policies that are in place, the fact that people are there to support their needs and understand them as children, again, if you don't have a supportive environment at school, then that just compounds everything else on top of that.
Yeah.
But the boys always used to say, wherever you are, Mum, that's home.
Yeah.
I haven't got home now, because wherever they are is home for me. And too many children can't say about a parent, they're their home. They stopped referring to the family home as home and just said, we're going to see Dad.
Mm.
They never said, we're going home.
Yeah, that's very, very common, that, for many, many children in this situation. Yeah.
And the thousands and thousands of children that have been made to go somewhere that's not home, that's a battleground, that's a dangerous place to be. You've taken them out of that environment and then you're forced to send them back to it because of a piece of legislation that said that is how it has to be. My whole argument was, says who? Who is the expert that says that is how it has to be? I'm hoping that now, with removing presumption of contact, children won't have to go into a place that once was home, but now is the most dangerous place for them.
Mm.
Won't have to go and see people that hurt them and damage them, take away the childhoods, strip away everything that they are as young people.
Yeah.
And give them a chance to breathe, to grow, to love, and to have a bright, safe future.
That requires them to understand that it isn't just the physical dangers that they are protecting these children from, it's the psychological long-term impact that they are protecting them from. We need to protect their developing minds, and make them feel safe. Because, you know, it isn't just, you know, it's also the risk that they could become to themselves at some point in their life, whether it be developing addictions as a means of self-soothing, whether it's they developing self-harm or having suicidal thoughts. It's all of these things as well that we are protecting them from. And this is when I say, when risk management is not just about protecting a person from the perpetrating party. Risk management is about, it is the overall risk. It's also risk managing the effects of trauma, of long-term trauma. That's what we're doing.
Risk managing should never be based on presumption.
No, absolutely. No. No, I mean, risk management is exactly that. Risk management is, what steps can we put in to prevent future harm? Risk management is not winging it and hoping and praying and crossing our fingers it's all going to work out fine. That's not risk management.
I used to be told by the CAFCAS officer, just keep an eye on them when they come home. except they never came home. And I never got to keep an eye on them again.
How many contact sessions did they have, Claire, before this happened?
Eight.
Eight. So not many at all.
No. And he didn't need 5 hours to do what he did. It took just 15 minutes for him to effectively take their lives right at that moment. And he took mine too, because I just exist. I don't live. I exist. Well,
that was the goal, though, Claire. That was always the goal.
Yes. And I knew he was capable of it. I knew that he would do this. Yeah. Didn't know how. But it wasn't about predicting. It should have been about preventing.
Yeah.
And there was not one element of prevention throughout the whole 6 months from leaving, from April to the October. The onus to protect them was on me. I was trying to protect them, trying to be a mum, trying to work, trying to find a new home, everything. And in the end, I failed at it all. Because in one action, they were gone.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And the worst thing about it is it could have been prevented, or his life could have been made too hard to do what he wanted to do. Yeah. Not one person was there in his way saying, you will not do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was enabled the whole way through. Whenever I reported the post-separation abuse, when he slashed my tyre, oh, there's no CCTV footage. It's your word against his.
Yeah.
But I had children in the car. I had my mum in the car. I was in the car. Nah, there's no CCTV footage. It's your word against his.
And this is a problem with coercive control. It is a lot of the time you don't have any evidence. So we are dependent on communicating a clear historical account
And whatever evidence we have, that's there to reinforce that pattern that we are communicating. Because coercive control, by definition, is always going to be a hard one to prove because you're not always going to have the evidence. But just because you don't have the evidence doesn't mean it's not happened. And that's the problem with coercive control. What would you say, Claire, before we wrap up, to other parents who are in your position where things are happening or things have happened and you don't have any evidence? And you're telling people what your concerns are, and nobody's hearing you. Nobody's hearing you. What would you say?
I would say keep on shouting loud, because this system does need to change and we need to hold these systems to account. I would say to them, use my case. Tell people what happened to me. Tell people what happened to Jack and Paul, because then they will sit up and listen. Because they do know about my case. They do know my name in the courts. For far too long, family courts have been allowed to fail children. And now's the time where we stand up and say, no more. We are not going to tolerate this anymore. The government have finally repealed presumption of contact. That took six governments, eight justice secretaries, many, many setbacks. But I kept on going because I did it for Jack and Paul. And all parents out there must keep on going for their children. It's amazing what we do for our children, what we can achieve for our children. I can no longer say, I do things with them, but I do things for them. And for all the parents out there listening to this, I would say never give up hope. Keep on telling authorities, keep on shouting from the rooftops. Make them accountable for decisions they make. Challenge their decisions. Make them think. Make them look deeper into the effects. And mostly, keep your children safe. If they don't want to go on visits, stand up to the authorities, don't send them. Listen to the voice of the child and remind people out there that your children do have a voice underneath the Domestic Abuse Bill. They are victims in their own right if they experience, see, or hear any of the four forms of abuse. I worked on that for 7 years, blood, sweat, and tears to get that through into law. Children are victims in their own right. Children's voices do matter. Children's lives do matter. And no longer should these lives be taken just because a court or a judge says that a perpetrator can. From now on, they can't. They've not been able to do that since 2021. So, therefore, challenge them. Mention the Domestic Abuse Bill. Mention presumption of contact. And most of all, keep your children safe, as safe as you can.
And that reinforces a point that I want to add in there is you have to keep shouting, but you have to learn to use your voice in a safe way. In a way, because unfortunately, and if you have to, it should not be the case. Look, I trained to help myself. I trained out of necessity, Claire. That's why I trained. I didn't Claire be train because I woke up one day and I thought, oh, I know, this is what I'm going to do. It didn't work like that. I trained out of necessity
because, you know, we shouldn't have to become our own experts. But unfortunately, if you when you are dealing with a system that has the degree of knowledge gaps that exist, they will recognize when you don't fully understand everything, and they will exploit it. And like I say, I trained because I got sick and tired of being gaslit. I knew what they were telling me was wrong, but I couldn't challenge it with conviction because I didn't have the knowledge or the language to articulate and push back hard enough to avoid me getting into trouble. And that's what I'm seeing so much of. So yes, you need to push back. So, you know, I'm seeing two things happening at the moment. I'm seeing there's one group of people who are continuing to use their voice in a very, very unsafe way. They are retaliating against the system in a dangerous way that is putting themselves at risk of not only criminalization, but also further risk of retaliation from the perpetrator. You know, should they be allowed to carry on their life after ruining yours? No, there's nothing fair about it. But the reality is, if you don't communicate in a safe way and push back in a safe way, you will indirectly, without it won't be your intention, increase your own risk and your children's risk in essentially. So clue yourself up, arm yourself. The saying goes, and it's so true, knowledge is power. You need
It's
to become,
agreed. Education, empowerment,
yes.
enablement. If you educate yourself about family courts, about family law, about the Domestic Abuse Bill, about the tools that can help you, if you educate yourself about that then empowers you and enables you to act in a way that will give you a better chance
Yes.
when facing
Yeah.
not just your abuser, but your secondary abusers, your
Yeah.
judges, Kafkas,
Exactly.
social services,
Yeah.
and everybody else involved.
Yeah.
So, education, empowerment, enablement.
And then the other problem that we're facing, that we're seeing as well, is that people say, well, what's the point? What's the point? Because there nobody listens, it's all corrupt. And so, what's the point? Well, that's not the answer either. That's not the answer either. I guess, and this is what I guess in people, and I know, you know, people are emotionally charged, but when people are going out on social media, sending out those messages and then saying, well, look, there's no point in calling the police, there's no point in doing X, Y, and Z. Well, that's you're not helping them because actually, look, we just need to be able to engage with these people in a better way, in a more empowered way that gives us a better chance of getting a positive result. But just giving up is not the answer because we've got a broken system. We've just got to know how to play the game better. That's it.
I understand that you are going to the family courts at the darkest time of your life.
Yeah.
You're exhausted, you're scared. You've had every part of your personality stripped away.
Yeah.
You've had crimes committed against you, which you have to constantly prove again and again and again. Why is it that with domestic abuse, the onus is on the victim to prove that a crime's been committed, when in any other case, the onus is on the police to A, prove a crime's been committed, and B, prove who's done it. But throughout this whole process, you mustn't let go of hope, and you mustn't let go of what's important, and that's the child.
Yes.
However tired, however scared, however angry you are, all that needs to be harnessed in a positive way, because the only advocate and the best advocate for your child is A, the child themselves, and B, you.
Yep. That's why I always say.
It is an intimidating place. It is a scary place.
Yeah.
But things are changing, and people must never lose hope and lose sight of why we fight in the family courts, of why we make sure that our children come home every day.
Yeah.
Safe, loved, and happy.
Yeah. You know your case better than anybody, any legal professional that you could possibly take on. You know your case better than anybody. You just need to know how to structure it and present it in a way that is undeniable. And that's the only thing that you're, and you're on, well, it's not the only thing that you're lacking, but because you also need the bit to build that resilience up to be able to take on that battle ahead and be able to communicate calmly and rationally. You can still show emotion, but there's a difference between showing emotion and showing up in a antagonistic and volatile way, which understandable, we understand it, but unfortunately that is going to form an opinion with the professionals that you are the problem, and they will switch off to everything else that you're saying. And that's what we don't want to happen. So we want you to be in a strong enough position where you can show up in a beneficial way that does yourself and your children justice.
And this is where removing presumption of contact, removing any presumptions at all within a courtroom, which is ridiculous when you think that in a Crown Court and a Magistrates Court, presumption has no place at all. And they don't start from the plea. They start from evidence. They don't even ask about the plea. They ask for the evidence first to make a judgment. Taking away all types of presumption out of family courts means that a lot of the bias, a lot of the presumption about the fitness of a person to be a good parent, all that will change. The whole landscape is about to be flipped on its head and changed around as it should have been many years ago. But at the center of it, when you feel like a piece of dirt underneath the whole world's shoe, everything seems like a mountain to climb. But there are good people out in this system that you can hold on to, and they will walk this mountain with you step by step. And it doesn't matter if you go backwards a bit, if you go sideways, there are people that can catch you. There are people that will be by your side and keep on pushing you up that mountain when your strength goes. And it's finding those people, harnessing that purpose and seeing it through to the end.
And again, it's hearing stories, you know, stories like this. Look, and although, you know, look, Claire has lost her children, but, you know, I want you to take her determination as a seed of hope that actually, look, no matter how bad things may be, we can find the strength to keep going. If Claire can, you can. And I know it's not that easy. It's not as easy as just that. But I just want you to take this as just one little seed. That's all you need. It's just that one little seed of hope to cling on to, that if Claire can do this and she's lost her children, well, I've still got my children. I can keep battling on this. No matter how tired I am, I can keep going. And just these stories are, you know, they're empowering. They are. And they fuel you when you feel at your lowest. You know, and although, you know, all my episodes are very real, they are very real because they've got to be very real. But they are also, you know, I also like them to be inspiring also. And that's the difference. We need the balance. We've got to stay real, but we also need inspiration as well. So thank you, Claire. It has been absolutely wonderful having you on. And you are amazing, honestly. Please keep going. This is not over. There's too much work to be done, Claire.
Yeah, and despite what everybody has said, I started this campaign in 2016. There was just me and Women's Aid and a belief that children deserve better, that children deserve to be kept safe, and children deserve to come first, hence the Child First campaign. We built that, just the three of us, in a cafe on a rainy January afternoon. And from that, we've never let go of the hope that we could change this. We've never let go of the fact that children's lives can be saved. And there is always hope, because if we lose hope, we've got nothing left as a person. So I always say that from a glimmer in 2014, it's now a beacon of hope. And this system is going to change. Just hang on in there. We are changing it. And believe, love, see, support, and care about each other, because change is coming.
And hopefully if this campaign gets published that I've put through, then we can
Yay.
tackle the rest of this flipping container. Get
Yeah.
everybody collaborating and as they should be.
Yeah. Sorry about that coughing fit. At the beginning, I thought, oh no, I've got this.
Well, thank you for listening, and we shall catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls, and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specializing in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.